The history of the West has been mostly Christian.
Diseases, land grabs, and outright massacres led to the annihilation of entire communities.
Sacrifice, service, affinity with the victims, courage, and above all, humility.
For someone to say love your enemies, that just sounded foolish.
Put it in practice, and you'll have a major contribution to a peaceful world.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart. It's been 20 years since the Good Friday Peace Agreement ended 40 years of violent conflict in Northern Ireland, the period known as the Troubles. Just to give you some background for those not familiar with this, on one side were the Unionists, also known as the Loyalists, the Protestants. They were mostly of British descent and wanted Northern Ireland to remain part of Britain. On the other side were the Nationalists or Republicans, the Catholics. Their stated goal was to join the Republic of Ireland, which had won its independence in 1921. I visited Belfast to film some of the segments for our documentary For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. Here we were exploring the topic of religion and violence. These days, the violence has subsided, but tensions remain between Protestant and Catholic groups. For example, when we were filming, a man came up to our cab driver, Jim, and asked us where we were from. Well, we were from Australia, but that wasn't really what the man was asking. Jim explained that it mattered to this man where we were from because that would indicate which side we were on. And in Belfast, there's a physical division of the city's Protestant and Catholic neighbourhoods as well. It's very striking, these huge, 10-metre-high walls that separate the two sides. They're lined with murals that show both sides of the bloody conflict, and every evening, at I think it's around 6 o'clock, they close the gates between these two neighbourhoods. Now, I've been to Berlin. What's left of the Berlin Wall, that's quite striking, but these walls in Belfast are a lot bigger. They're 10 metres high. The last part was built in 2004, which was 6 years into the peace process. Now, Jim was my driver while we were in town, and he had quite a lot to say about the Troubles. He'd lived through them. And that's been one of the great things and sometimes really gut-wrenching things about making this documentary. I've gotten to meet people like Jim who've seen some of the best and, in his case, some of the worst of Christianity. So we set up a makeshift studio in his cab and recorded a conversation as we drove through Belfast. A couple of things before we get into it. First, Jim's accent is really strong. In the documentary, we've got subtitles, but on a podcast, you're going to have to bear with me repeating some of what he says. And I want to say from the outset that Jim is from the Catholic side, so we are getting that perspective here, one that would no doubt look very different were we talking to a loyalist from that period. Here's Jim.
I believe it's more complicated because, as I say, religion's too easy to use to cover a multitude of sins.
Yeah.
You know yourself. Because a lot of this conflict here in the north of Ireland would have been based around the whole civil rights issues rather than religion. And remember,
Jim is an Irish Catholic, but one of the first things he pointed out was that the conflict in Northern Ireland wasn't purely a religious one. In fact, it wasn't even the main thing. And that was the lasting impression for me of my time in Belfast. It was the way that it became even clearer to me that this conflict had so little to do with religion. The cab drivers all said this. It was a tribal conflict, and religion was appropriated to increase tension and struggle. And this is common around the world. Conflicts that we think of as religious often turn out to be, when we look more closely, about much more than just people's spiritual beliefs. But there's no question, and we have to be honest about this, that religion, when it's used as an identity marker, can be a potent force for ramping up a sense of us versus them.
Because in 1969 here, when you think about it, a lot of people would see a war in the north of Ireland at the time based around a sectarianism of a Catholic and Protestant trying to murder each other. Whereas most people, let's say, on one side of the wall, would have seen this here based around a civil rights issue. Okay? Unfortunately, we had a larger community that had the rights, and we had a smaller community who didn't have the rights. So there was your conflict. That was always going to be the conflict.
This larger community with the rights that Jim's talking about was the British Protestant community. They had the economic and political power and had done so for a long time. He explained it like this. In every town, say there are 10 judges, 9 would be Protestant. So if you're a young Catholic man who did something wrong, you'd face a judge who would most likely be Protestant and biased against you. On the other hand, that Protestant judge is likely to be biased against you because someone from the Catholic side may have tried to kill him a couple of years ago. So, Jim says, justice isn't always blind. Beyond the court system, religious discrimination was rampant in all spheres of life, especially when it came to looking for work.
You got to even look at the record books and the history books here. It will tell you that discrimination was rife based on religion rather than a colour.
Yeah.
See that? So your name was one of the ways you were given away. Think about the name. If you have an Irish name,
yeah,
somebody right away would say.
It's a red line.
Yep, it's a red line. Just goes through that and good night, Irene, you're not getting the job there. And that even took place in what was known as the civil service. I think about the civil service at that time. The civil service would have been an arm of the government,
yeah,
or an arm of the state, whatever way you like to look at it. So even in that sort of sense, you may not get a job based on your religion. Now, I don't know what it was like for yourselves, but here in the north, we used to be asked, please state your religion on the bottom of the form. Can you imagine doing that today?
Yeah.
You would be held to pay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
By 1969, though, something was starting to shift. As the civil rights movement was gathering momentum in the US, its ideas spread to the Catholic communities in Northern Ireland. They decided enough is enough. They were more confident, Jim says, and their numbers were growing. There was probably a 60-40 split in the population. The Protestants still outnumbering the Catholics, but by less of a majority. The Troubles, as they became known, began with a civil rights march in October 1968 to demand equal rights for Catholics in Northern Ireland. The march turned violent, and from then on, things deteriorated rapidly.
So that would have been what was known as the tit-for-tat war, where the Protestants and Catholics would have murdered themselves on the basis of, you kill us, we kill you. You know what I mean? So it's pretty much the same.
Bombings, lots of bombings.
Yes.
On both sides.
On both sides. Yeah. On both sides.
As Jim and I drive around, we keep passing different bombing sites in this tit-for-tat war. Every now and then, Jim will point somewhere and say something like, see, this is the spot here. 9 people were murdered when a bomb exploded prematurely. There are memorial gardens and famously murals everywhere. People's homes and the walls of people's homes have been turned into really these depictions of fallen young men, almost always, from the various neighbourhoods. And there's lots of symbolism in these murals. But what's notable, and Jim made this point, is how few religious symbols are part of the mural depictions. It's something that speaks into this idea that Jim keeps saying, which is there wasn't a lot of religion going on here. And then we come to this famous site of the Ballymurphy Massacre. In 1971, the British launched Operation Demetrius, and they flooded the area with British soldiers in an attempt to defeat the Catholics. If you leave your house, you could be shot, the British told the people. A Catholic priest who went out onto the street to read a man his last rites was shot twice, and he was killed. 11 people in total were killed during the massacre.
So you would have been a young man.
I was a young man. In 1961 I was born, so I was 8 years of age, just coming into the start of the conflict, and that was it.
You grew up
very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always say, as in 1997, 98 was the first time in my life I ever seen peace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yep. It was a big time, if you know what I mean, in that sense.
And so that really dominated
life. Oh, yeah. When I used to get up out of bed in the mornings, my first thought was, how do we avoid being murdered by the murder gangs, okay? Yep. Also, how do we avoid the British Army from the harassments and stuff like that? And also, how do we attack the British Army? But the change being today, when my kids get out of bed in the morning and say, okay, we'll have to go to work to get our mortgage paid. See the change?
Yeah.
A lot can change in a generation. Jim says his now adult kids are really just concerned about paying their mortgages and living their lives safely, knowing they don't have that fear of getting shot or randomly blown up.
And how often were there bombing? Were you conscious as a child?
Every day. I always tell a story about when we were young, we used to have a game called Spot the Bomb. Spot the Bomb.
Really?
And what it entailed was you sat on the mountain. You see the mountain here?
Yeah.
You would have sat on the mountain and looked into the city and try and work out what the bombs were going off in the city. That's a £100 bomb. That's a £200. £1,000 bomb, you didn't have to worry because it just blew hell out of the city.
So you, that's a very common experience then?
Yes, Spot the Bomb. Yeah. Spot the Bomb was a fantastic game because you used to win money.
Really?
Yes.
How did you go?
I was done all right.
Car bombs were common back in Jim's earlier days. The IRA's bombing campaigns wreaked a lot of havoc. He says you couldn't leave your car parked somewhere because it would look like a car bomb. And if you were on a street and saw a car parked by itself, you'd turn to avoid it because the likelihood of it being a bomb was very real.
But if you look down your left here, you want to see the wall itself. You see it there?
Coming up after the break, we take a closer look at the peace walls of Belfast.
So we're going to go through the wall here.
So this is from... This is the Protestant down here, okay?
Now, if you look directly in front of you, you can see the Catholic flags, the green, white, and the orange.
Yeah.
You see it?
Yeah.
So we're moving through the wall now. We have come over to the Catholic area.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Jim's a cab driver in Belfast. I met him when we were in the city to film segments for our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. Jim's an Irish Catholic man, but he was just a boy during the Troubles, so he has some stories to tell from his experiences on the Catholic side of the conflict.
And the difference being with the Catholics here in Belfast again, is we consider ourselves Irish, okay? We want to see the unification of our country. I, Ireland as a whole. The difference being today is we don't want to see anybody losing their life to achieve it, which was not always the case, remember. We ended up taking life. We also ended up in prison for long periods of time based on that whole sort of thing.
Yes. Right?
So as a young boy, that was your grounding, if you know what I mean. You just came up and you knew that you would have took part in this. As a young boy, even at 9 years of age, you were involved in street violence here. Okay. And I did explain to you about the first time we met a Protestant.
Yeah.
That's a funny way to meet somebody, isn't it?
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah.
So you, your first time you met a young girl.
Yeah, it's a girl, and it's a lovely looking young girl at the time, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden I discovered her. She was a Protestant and I was a Catholic, but she didn't have the two heads.
that was a shock to you.
Yes, it was a shock. It was a shock to me.
And that's because you really did grow up with an entirely separate us versus them mentality.
Yeah, of course. That was always told. I always say it was never ever told to me by my family, if you know what I mean, okay? But it was just the communities we lived in.
Yeah.
Okay? So it would have been just reinforced every day, but never by your own family. But slowly but surely, living in these communities, you would have seen this. Okay, so you had deep fear of Protestantism.
So Jim's driving us along and through the walls. And while he's driving, he tells me about the deep fear that he grew up with of Protestants. It's just something he absorbed in his community. And it took a long time to shake that off. Back in the day, he tells me that he had to learn how to sing the Seiche, because if you're a Catholic caught on the Protestant side, this is a song you'd have to sing to prove that you were Protestant.
So to be a Catholic living in these areas, you had to learn the song too, in case you were caught on the wrong side of the wall.
Right.
So if you were caught on the wrong side of the wall, the first word that would be, what are you, a Catholic or Protestant? You would say, Protestant.
Yeah.
You say, okay, sing a Seiche. Uh-huh. And you had to sing the song.
You had to know how to do that.
You had to know the song. Same as a Protestant. If he was on this side of the wall, and he was caught in that side of the wall, the first thing you would have said to him was, okay, say the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know the Hail Mary.
Would Protestants typically learn it for that purpose?
Well, I would imagine so. They wouldn't learn it as a religious thing, okay,
no.
Because it's nothing to do with the religion in that sense.
Yeah.
So I always say it's the same with the Seiche for me. It's nothing to me.
No.
But I learned it just as a way.
I bet you can still sing it.
I can sing most of it.
Yeah.
I can sing most of it, you know what I mean?
We managed to find a recording of this song online. There's a big celebration every year on the 12th of July, Orange Man's Day. It's a public holiday in Northern Ireland, actually. And it commemorates the victory of King William III, a Protestant king, over James II, a Catholic king, back in the 1600s.
It is beautiful, it is beautiful.
typically, these are massive parades held by loyalist marching bands, and streets are lined with British flags and bunting, and there are large towering bonfires that are lit, and it's often very tense. While the people on one side of the conflict were Protestants and the people on the other were Catholics, Jim says that the people engaged in the fighting probably didn't take their religion very seriously at all.
How religious were those people? How devoted were they?
I would say they wouldn't have been very devoted, because remember, in 1979, the Pope got down on his knees here and he says, please, please stop the violence.
Yeah.
It continued on, okay? Also remember the Queen of England, on many, many occasions she appealed to the Protestant paramilitaries, the loyalist paramilitaries, to stop murdering people. Again, they didn't listen. So religion was never taken on board by these paramilitary leaders, do you understand? They never ever stopped to think murder's mortal sin, as we say in the church.
What Jim says here really struck me. He said they, Protestants and Catholics, never stopped to think that murder is a mortal sin.
Unfortunately, what we had was one side of the paramilitary group being made up of Protestants. So it was assumed they were all of Protestant faith. You know what I mean? They would argue that their war was based around remaining the British part of it.
Yeah.
Whereas you think about the Catholics, most Catholics would have been in the IRA, but very few of them would have had any sense of being religious Catholics.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It was just a tale we were born with as young.
Jim says that while there were many Catholics in the IRA, the Catholic Church never supported the IRA. They never supported the violence. When members of the IRA were killed and their funerals were held in their churches, the Catholic priests didn't allow anyone to bring what he called military trappings into the funeral. Anything symbolic that represented the IRA or paramilitary groups was banned.
Because it did really become a big issue. You know what I mean? The Catholic Church says even if you were a member of the IRA at the time, you were excommunicated.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be a big step for anybody who was really, you know, off faith.
Yes.
You think about it, you know, you have there's a terrible decision. You can see the injustices that were being caused, so you could justify your war.
Yeah.
But you also had your faith. Yes. So you were battling
and
faith.
And the church itself and was the church saying, itself this is not okay.
It's not right. Yeah. You cannot justify it in any way, shape or form.
Mm.
Jim says you were forced to choose between fighting or keeping the faith. But again, the situation was more complicated than that. Because yes, while the vast majority of priests were horrified by the violence on the streets and the church never supported the IRA, there are some stories that indicate otherwise. Like the one Jim tells me of a priest who blessed the weapons used in an attack carried out by the IRA. Maybe that gave the appearance of a religious war, Jim says.
Well, I always put it like this. I don't have any Protestant friends, okay? But I have Protestant acquaintances. That's the best way to describe it.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you imagine?
But I have a Protestant son-in-law.
Right, well, there you go.
There you are.
Well, that's a step.
It's a big step. Yeah. It's a big step.
Presumably you're...
I'm sure the young man was horrified when he came in to meet me, thinking about my history and all this sort of thing, and then all of a sudden here we have him right in front of us.
But actually, that's a... very important part of communities coming together,
yeah,
is when
of
families
course.
Start to intermarry.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So that's a,
yeah,
that's
a, in that sense.
Jim may not have Protestant friends, but he has one Protestant in the family. So it's fair to say things are different, but there are still deep divisions, and it will take time and hard work to continue to live at peace with one another, to continue to find common ground and grow as one community.
Yeah, back to that, as you say, it really is how you show how communities have grown, especially this community I'm going to talk about in general, because when you think about it, today we can live sort of peace in inverted commas, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But also remember, we see this as two different cultures in this city, because on one side of the wall, as we were on the Shankill Road there, but you've done the murals and stuff there, that would be considered the British part of Northern Ireland, okay? You're now in what we consider the Irish part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So really, we look at it in that sort of sense.
Yeah. And so, so culturally it's very different.
It is very culturally different.
And
think about...
Do you imagine, you were talking about, you have acquaintances now.
Yes.
You're a Protestant, but you didn't have that before.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, either yourself or other people, starting to develop real friendships? cross that divide.
Yeah, often, listen, I'm only speaking in general terms myself, but I know fine right that there's plenty of Protestants and Catholics are friends today. Mm. Even thinking about the mixed marriages,
yes,
here in the north of Ireland, that was always a big issue. Mm. Because you didn't marry outside of your own community, and if you did marry outside your own community, you moved out of your community.
Yes.
Okay? So in other words, if a girl here hadn't met a Protestant fella, 99% of the Protestant fellas wouldn't have come into this area,
no,
especially. Okay.
They moved to Australia.
Yeah, exactly, which you're probably fine, because a lot of couples who have moved across the world, probably to Australia, America and stuff like that,
yeah,
you will find they're mixed.
Yeah.
There is a mixed marriage in them,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what I mean? So it's very important. Mm. But today you'll find a lot of couples here, same as my own son-in-law and my daughter.
Yeah.
Are starting now to, they're looking beyond the religious thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They don't look at the religious
and
thing.
And does that work fine? Like, do people just accept that now?
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It will be accepted, but some places it won't be accepted.
No.
Remember, there's always going to be, not everybody agrees with peace.
No.
For Jim, he's come a long way. Back in the 80s, he could have never imagined that his life would be what it is now.
85 was the time that I took on the attitude in life that, if you're here, you're here, you're dead, you're dead.
Yeah.
Really. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It was a time of no hope, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And no matter what people may say to you, we all just had that live for the day.
Yeah.
Really. You know what I mean? So
did,
if somebody...
Did you feel like there was no potential for this,
yeah,
to get better?
There was no potential. There was no hope. A classic example is to say, if you had said to me 30 years ago that I'm going to be driving around Belfast with a film crew talking, not worrying about anybody's religion, that says you're on cocaine, you're on heroin or something.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
That's how far distant this seemed to me.
Yes.
Reality of life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But think about it, today we do this here.
Mm.
You know, and even with Stevie there, Stevie's a Protestant,
mm,
I'm Catholic, you know,
mm,
this would never have been dreamt of.
Yeah.
Would never have dreamt of it in a million years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the sun's out today, that's a
and the sun has, yes, this is Belfast.
Is that symbolic of...
It's almost like one of those jokes that starts with a priest, a rabbi, and a minister walk into a bar. Except in this case, it's an Irish Catholic and a Protestant. Jim and Steve, our drivers, two men from opposite sides of a violent conflict, working together to help us out on a documentary about the best and worst of Christianity. How about that?
Was I shot twice by the British Army?
Shot.
Towards the end of our ride through Belfast, Jim tells me that when he was 13 years old, he was shot twice by an officer in the British Army. The first shot went through his arm and he was permanently crippled in his hand. You can still see that today. Second shot went through his back, just inches from his spine, and he was very lucky to survive.
Were you up to no good?
No, I was not. That's the important thing about it. I was actually not. I was actually playing in the street and he shot me once. And when he shot me the first time, I went 6 feet in the air with that shot. And then he shot me the second time in the back. That was a kill shot. I was a 13-year-old.
You hit twice in the one?
Hit twice by the same soldier. The doctor at the time told me if it had been an inch the other side of me, I would have been crippled for the rest of my life. That's known as the kill shot here.
Yeah. That's a traumatic thing for anyone.
It's a colourful
shape. A 13-year-old.
Yeah.
What, as you've gone through life, have you been able to process that and come to any sort of peace about it?
Yeah, again, a good quote. If you had said to me in 1981, how do you feel about the soldier? I said, if you ever see the soldier, I'll put him in the ground.
Yeah.
If you ask me today, I wouldn't worry too much about it. You understand? So
That's a big shift. It was stunning to hear, actually. For Jim to go from saying all of his life that if he ever saw that British soldier again, he'd put him in the ground, to now saying he wouldn't worry too much about it. It really sounded like not quite forgiveness, and actually Jim was pretty clear about that, but it's approaching it. There's certainly a sense of moving towards peace. From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with me, Simon Smart. Our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined, is in cinemas from May the 9th. We explore the good, the bad, the ugly, and the unexpected when it comes to the impact of Christianity on our world. Go to betterandworse.film to buy your tickets or to host your own screening for your community. That's the website again, betterandworse.film. We'll be featuring more interviews and stories from our doco in the coming weeks, so please subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Just hop on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and type in Life and Faith in the search box to find us. Next week...
What kind of country is it that we live in when you can't tell a child why his father was killed because you didn't want him to grow up hating white people?